Good evening, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another lovely evening of Jaybird watching. We hope you're all having a better week than the Toronto Blue Jays had, but we're going to have some fun and looking forward to the future here in the next couple weeks as we once again have the normal gang with me here, as it's my week to host, Adam Corsair, Brendan Panikkar. Fellas, how we doing?
Could be better.
Yeah, we're all right.
I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, you are full Matt Shoemaker right now. I'm so jealous that you've got the curl going, and I've been growing the beard almost as long as you. I don't get the depth out. It just kind of like curls back up on itself like a freaking bad haircut.
Listen, man, I got it going. It's a nice drippy fade day. It's good. Everything's cleaned up. I cleaned up here. I'm good.
It's good.
Everything's good.
With us from the Jays Jam podcast, Chris K., how you doing, buddy?
Boys. Brendan Panikkar, Adam Corsair. The fabulous.
Fabulous. Love that you're sporting the old school Roy Halladay, the Angry Bird jersey, and the JD Bringer of Rain in the back there.
You know what? We have to think positively, and that's kind of what that's all about. We got to think back to happier days. It's not all bad, though. It's really not all bad. But yeah, you know, things are good. Things are okay. The bats are going to come. Let's talk about it.
The reinforcements are on the way. But first, before we talk about the good things that are coming, hopefully here in the very soon and near future, let's talk last week. So coming into this past week since our last recording, the Blue Jays were a 3-3 split where they actually had picked up 2 out of 3 against the New York Yankees. Things were looking up, right? Why the hell not? You know, you're excited about the Yankees being horrible in the basement, and we actually were able to take them to school 2 out of 3 games. But we go into Kansas City, fellas, and unfortunately, things did not get better, and it looked almost as bad as the last, you know, few frowning faces we've had in that ballpark. The Blue Jays were not even able to really get any kind of offense going. It was rough. They won 1 out of 4 games, and that was the only game that they really even showed any signs of life. Other than the first day on Jackie Robinson Day, they were able to score 5. But in all reality, it was really, really rough. And going to talk into it, what were your guys' takeaways? I'm going to let us start with our lovely guest here, Chris. And talk about the KC series and what just was horribly wrong. And I think you know where I'm alluding.
Well, who expected Tanner Roark to come out of the bullpen, first of all?
That's right.
He wasn't terrible.
No, he wasn't.
Terrible. Like the rest of the way to get there was pretty bad. You know what? Kansas City, when we were kind of doing our run through for the year, I had Kansas City pretty, I don't want to say high up on my list, but there was definitely a possibility that I could see them squeaking third in the Central Division. So I don't think I was terribly shocked to see a good competitive series. Now, having said that, these are games that we should be winning. These are games that we need to win. I hate the whole rhetoric that it's early. I hate it because the games in April mean just as much as the games in September. They're all worth one win, and these are wins that we need to be getting right now. Granted, they've had some really good pitching. They got their bats. They got Merrifield's one of my favorite players to watch in the AL. He's so exciting. The boys just went silent on the bats. And who would have thought that you could say that we have all these injuries, and I know we'll get to that in a little while, but who could have thought that if you said to any one of us in March, Romano's hurt, Merriweather's hurt, Teoscar's out, Springer hasn't played a game yet, and who could have predicted that we'd be looking at the offense going, where are you?
Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
And the pitching holding up with all those injuries, Chatwood, Stripling, Ray didn't pitch a few games. Like, who would have thought that the pitching would be holding up its end of the bargain?
That is definitely the one thing that is the shocking takeaway, I think, from the Kansas City series, that we actually were salvageable on the mound, and the offense was the complete, clear, obvious part that we need to improve on. Brendan, do you want to pick up that part of the conversation and run with it?
Yeah, sure. Chris, to your point about the Royals, they actually had a very sneaky good offseason. Some very under-the-radar moves, picking up Benintendi Soler just in, was it 2019, he hit almost 50 home runs. They have some nice, solid cornerstone pieces, and obviously Sal Perez is still there. I know Danny Duffy didn't pitch in that series, but he's been off to a fantastic start, and Brady Singer looks like he's the real deal. So you're having the makings of a team that maybe not as soon as this year, but another solid offseason, and they could very much be in the conversation for a wild card or even challenge for the division next year. So you're right. They are a very, very competitive team. I just want, like, Thursday's game bothered me just so much because Anthony Kay deserves so much better than what he got. Mm-hmm. Because, man, like, there was some borderline strikes that weren't gone, that didn't go his way. He was doing a decent job at painting 97 inside to righties and all that stuff. And unfortunately, the defense let him down in the outfield and at third base. I know we'll get into a lot of that later. But it was definitely rough. And yeah, I mean, Tanner Roark did stabilize the game. I know he gave up some runs when he came in, but he got outs, and that's what matters. Like, I look back at that weekend, and the story continues to be Steven Matz, just continues to be unreal. I'm not expecting Matz to be a ERA under 2 or even an ERA under 3 guy, but his ground ball percentage is back up to where it was in his best days with the Mets. All of his pitchers are working right now, and I know we'll talk about the race here is coming up, but I'm sure as hell happy that he's opening the series to go up against Tyler Glasnow tomorrow, because Glasnow has been off to an unreal start too. So if you're a betting man, bet the under on the over under tomorrow, because I don't think there's going to be many runs. But yeah, I mean, injuries aside, I really think they should have won Saturday night's game. Like, if Tommy Malone, of all people, if you told me Tommy Malone was going to start a game within the first 2 weeks of the season, I'd be like, what the fuck happened? Like, he's been a find, and he was really, really good, and he was a good again last night in relief after Trent Thornton came out. So I think they should have won Saturday's game, and you know what? You got to tip your cap to a good pitcher in Brady Singer to shutting down an offense like that. So I'm not as upset when I look back at Sunday. They should have won both games on Saturday, and that's what was upsetting, them losing on Saturday night.
Yeah, we were almost a series split, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Came up one short. Adam, go right ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to harp too much on the negatives because I understand the Kansas City series was very frustrating. I was very frustrated by that because, Chris, you're right. We should be beating teams like this, even though I do give the Royals a lot of credit, and they are up and coming. I think they're in a similar position, and maybe not parallel, but they're close to how the Blue Jays are positioned. Like, the Royals are going to be good for quite some time, and I don't see them conquering the division this year, but they can certainly challenge for it in years to come. But then again, the White Sox are probably going to be pretty good too. But regardless, it's one of those situations where the narrative has been flipped, right? And how often in the offseason did we talk about pitching? How often in the offseason were we concerned with pitching? Pitching's going to be the bane of this team. And now it's kind of like, it's not that bad. You know, things could be better. I want to give Robbie Ray a lot of credit, but it certainly wasn't his best outing either, even though he did get out of a couple jams. Matz looked great. Kay, my expectations weren't super high, but it was obviously higher than it would have been if it was Roark, who did pitch okay coming out in relief. We're in a tough situation. With the pitching being sort of hanging on its threads, it is performing quite well, better than I anticipated. If you would have told me the litany of injuries that we've experienced with this team on the pitching end, I would assume at this point we're screwed. But they've been holding their own. It's the offense that, you know, when you look at this team, when you look at the players on this team that should be hitting consistently, and I'm not talking, you know, home runs or anything, just getting on base. If you would have told me that Telez, Gurriel, Biggio are having these slumps, bad, hard slumps, I would have been thinking, okay, at least we have these other players to pick it up, but it's not really happening. So as the show goes on, but that is more concerning to me than anything. There's a sense of relief that the pitching is holding up and we're doing okay there, but there is a legitimate sense of urgency that the offense, I don't like relying on players coming back to make an offense click. I don't like that. That doesn't sit well with me. Similar to you, Chris, about the whole early narrative. It doesn't sit well. That's scapegoating. This team needs to hit, and I don't know how you fix this.
So on that note of fixing it, let's move on to the Red Sox series, where the offense looked horrible in game one, and then we actually saw a sign of life. There's a fucking pulse, Jello. And it's just nice to see something refreshing on this. But to go back to that point, what we shouldn't be having to rely on Josh Palacios being like the best offensive contribution to this lineup just to make up for the fact that the guys that we should be getting the offense from coming back out there. I'll admit that he's looked okay, but he's still obviously young and raw, but could be worse. So game one, we lost 2-4 to the Red Sox. It was pretty close for the majority. And then we won 6-3 yesterday to close out the series. So the Blue Jays have split the series with the quote-unquote reigning American League East, you know, first place people. So, which, speaking of, anybody want to tell me where the hell that happened?
Very timely hitting.
Yes.
When did Christian Arroyo become one of the best hitters in baseball? Guy was the number one draft pick. It's like, was it Baduda for the Tigers?
Oh, Akil Baddoo.
Yeah, Baddoo. That's it. So you have all these guys that are all of a sudden stepping up their game, and Alex Verdugo even being one of the big hitters on that team, thanks to my fantasy team appreciating those points. But was never in a million years expecting the Red Sox to be anywhere above us at any given point in the season, regardless of this slow start where the Blue Jays are now, what, 8-11? Is that what I thought I saw? Yeah. So, eight and ten. So we're just under the 500 line, but was it encouraging for you guys to see the fact that we did play the Red Sox being such a good team that we held them collectively to 7 runs in 2 games for a pitching staff that is quote-unquote not good, and one of those days was a bullpen day, and then the fact that the offense was able to sprinkle in enough to, in you know, the game yesterday to be able to start trending up a little bit. Adam, we'll go reverse on this. You want to pick that up?
Yeah, no, I was not encouraged at all.
No?
I'm not sorry. Look, I give credit to Rodriguez in that first game. Shout out to him for having to battle all the way back, and he pitched a great game for the Red Sox. And that pains me to say because I fucking hate the Red Sox. but are we really going to be proud of the Blue Jays beating up on Garrett Richards? Like, is this something that we're going to say, okay, we're righting the ship? We should be doing that, right? This is something that we just should be doing, and that's what's happening. I like seeing the team hit, but there was a point in that game where it got a little bit too close, right? And right there. What I noticed, and I side texted this to Craig, Bo Bichette, I don't know, is the shortstop of this future for this team. I don't know that he's equipped to play shortstop. Kevin Biggio cannot play third base.
Oh my God! And, say it.
Yes, I said it. I'm sorry. He can't play third base. And I don't know that Simeon's that good at second. I think we have a real problem in the infield. And out of all the infield positions, somehow Vladdy's playing really pretty good.
Yeah, compared to what he was doing.
It amazes me that Bo and Kevin are having difficulty reaching to Vlad at first. The amount of balls that have been in the dirt to him is just outrageous. I had some serious concerns more from the win than I did from the loss. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, I'm right there with you. I wasn't overly encouraged with that series either. And if you have a guy who's struggling with his command as much as Garrett Richards was, and you only walk away with, what was it, just one run after the first inning when you had two guys on base, I think just one was in scoring position. But still, with all that command issues, Garrett Richards shouldn't have escaped the third inning yesterday. And he managed to go 5 and actually settled down quite nicely in the third, fourth, and fifth. So they failed to put the pressure on it and just make it an easy game to watch. And to that point, and it being a bullpen day, it just meant for much higher leverage situations for the bullpen too. Now, shout out to the bullpen. They were incredible, and they've been incredible all year. Like, my goodness, Anthony Castro has been a hell of a find.
Yeah, yes, he's great.
Joel Piamps. I know Piamps gave up the home run to Sal Perez on Saturday night that lost the game, but Piamps has been good too. Not as impressive to me as Anthony Castro, but that's just – you got to salute Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins for evaluating that kind of talent and picking them up off the waiver wire.
Multiple times, especially
Castro, to me right now, definitely has the inside track over Piamps to stick around once this bullpen gets a little healthier. And then I'll say it again, Tommy Malone was great again last night, and they need to ride him until the wheels fall off, because, I mean, maybe he can do something similar to what Mark Burley did towards the end of his career, be 85 and just paint the corners and have a deadly changeup. But no, Adam, just going back to the offensive side of things, it wasn't encouraging. There's too many bats that aren't hitting, especially guys that you need to count on. If you have a lineup with Josh Palacios in there almost every single day, if you have a lineup with Danny Jansen in there almost every single day, I know Kirk's looked better the last little while, and if you have a lineup with Rowdy Tellez in there almost every single day, you need the other guys who you're supposed to be counting on season long to be hitting, and that is Semien, who's done nothing outside of the four home runs. Luckily, he looked like he may start to get going with the two hits last night. Lourdes Gurriel just looks lost right now. I don't know what the hell's going on with him, and he's the one I'm pretty concerned about moving forward. And Cavan as well is looking lost at the plate too. It looked better last night being in the leadoff spot. That seems where he's comfortable working deep in the count, but still, there's too many guys not hitting that this team needs to count on to be a playoff team, and it's just not happening right now. I hope it changes soon. This team is notorious for starting slow in April. As long as they are around 500, maybe a game or two below next week at this time, I'll be okay with that. But that just means you got to turn it up so much more come May and April and June, because, Chris, again, to your point, it is early, but at the same time, it's not. The 2015 team had to go on some insane kind of run to just overtake the Yankees and the Red Sox. They barely lost after the trade deadline in 2015, and that was only to get them to win the division. Imagine what that team could have done with the more consistent and better April and May. So, it's time to turn it around offensively for sure.
Brendan, don't sleep on Baraki, though. I know you mentioned fantastic. He's been amazing.
He's looked great last night, too.
He's been great.
Chris, run with it.
Yeah, that's who I was going to talk about. I was super, super encouraged watching Baraki last night. I didn't get to see the game on, what are we now? We're on Thursday now, so on Tuesday night, I didn't get to see that game. I was kind of half following along on Twitter, and it didn't look very encouraging. So after I was done a couple of training courses, I opted to go to bed instead.
Good choice.
To be fair, though, like, how long can we run out Danny Jansen? His approach isn't getting any better. I said it last night when it got to 3-0. It was his first at bat when he walked, and they were Garrett Richards was wild as all hell and walked a batter to that inning as well. I'm like, if he even thinks about swinging before he throws two strikes, like, somebody needs to give their head a shake. And speaking of who needs to give their head a shake, whoever told Kevin Biggio to start swinging on the first pitch?
Yeah.
Oh, that person needs to do their job. You're literally taking all of his value, and flushing it down the toilet. All of it.
His value is in being a patient hitter and waiting for the pitch to come to him instead of
his eye.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
being aggressive is not his game.
No, and long story short for me, I wasn't encouraged to go up there and only score a handful of runs against Garrett Richards when he was that wild. And the few hits that they did scrape together, like Vladdy jumped on the first pitch and screamed it to left center field. That was great. But that's what you're expecting out of him right now. You're looking for those bad pitches, and he was clearly scuffling at that point and just wanted to throw something over the plate after hitting Bo. So that's what you need out of him. but they need to be more patient as a team. I don't know if this whole rhetoric of swinging on the first pitch is starting to go to everybody or not. I don't want to say that there's too many strikeouts. Everybody's striking out an insane amount, but like collectively as a team, they got to put the bat on the ball more though, and at least give themselves a chance.
Yeah, so just to put some of that in perspective, because I agree 10 billion times over that the Blue Jays offense is still, that game yesterday relied on the fact that Garrett Richards walked six guys and hit a batter. So there was too many things that were going in. The Red Sox at that point were more or less giving the Blue Jays every chance to fail. And I meant to look this up a minute ago, but how many they left on base during the game was 11. So regardless of that, you left 11 runners on base and went 4-for-15 with runners in score position. So I looked up a couple of other things that I'm not shocked by, but the one that I thought was kind of crazy is the Blue Jays still have a +10 run differential in the midst of all this lack of offense. So there's some good things going on, and that's literal full-on statistical proof that the pitching staff has been doing well with this, I'm going to say, hapodgery.
There's only a handful of teams in the AL with a positive run differential right now. Yeah. There's only five other teams, maybe, if that.
Yep, exactly right, five. And the biggest one is the Boston Red Sox, 27. Mm-hmm. We have a plus 10. And we're in third place at an 8-10 record. But to pull out offense out of that conversation even further, the Blue Jays are one of the lowest teams that they're in the middle of their laying on left on base percentage right now. So the guys that they're leaving on are not coming in. And then they are also apparently only averaging 4 runs a game, which puts us pretty much in the basement of that category. It's pretty rough.
Yeah.
The teams that are below us are the teams that you would expect to be in that conversation, except for the New York Mets and the Yankees are apparently in the middle of that crap. But those are two teams that have been, well, not the Yankees right now because they can't pitch their way out of a brown paper bag, but the Mets have been winning and because of their pitching.
Yeah.
So that makes some sense. So I just saw those things and I thought that was kind of crazy and completely points the center of the problem to the offense like we're talking about here. It's not just us saying this. There's literally full-on math proof of it. So What does the Blue Jays need to do? And this is the injury conversation. So I'm going to use this as my segue points and be able to move into this conversation. Right now, the Blue Jays' biggest glaring issues are the fact that they have a ton on the injury list. And it is some of our biggest names. Some are for very, very, very odd reasons. Some are for illness. One of our best hitters in Teoscar Hernandez isn't expected back until like this coming week. The, obviously George Springer. The rumor is, guys, that he might play tomorrow night or over the weekend.
He will not play tomorrow night now.
They have said that officially now? Okay.
Intra-squad game.
Okay, that's fine.
We'll see how he reacts to that.
Yeah. So you would think that puts him on point for either Sunday or Monday at that point. Because they're going to give him a day rest after doing something like that to see how he bounces back. And next
they'll probably keep they'll keep him at a Tropicana.
Oh, I would think that would be a good way to do that, too. But then again, that is also taking it to your rival, too. So there is that. But then also, we just added Thomas Hatch to the now 60-day DL. And it puts his ETA back in June. Ross Stripling is going to be allegedly coming back in the next week, along with Tyler Chatwood. So those are some reinforcements. Julian Merriweather is also going to be out to May, and they're still projecting Nate Pearson to be out till May. And I think they also said TJ Zoik is basically on the shelf until May now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that's honestly, guys, that's not a bad team sitting on our aisle if you really break it down. So is there anything, those couple guys that are coming back in, Teoscar, Springer, Chatwood, and Ross Stripling in the next week or so, is that giving you any vote of confidence to be able to help take it to the Rays and company that are coming in the next couple of weeks?
No.
Yeah. Tell me how you really feel about it.
I mean, not yet. Let's talk about the less serious of the injuries and or the shelving, and that's Teoscar, right? And that's no disrespect to COVID or anything. It's just the facts, right? Mm-hmm.
He's out for illness, not due to the fact that something is obviously hurt.
Yeah, so it's not structural, right? So he's going to take a while to get back, I would assume, right? I don't know what you're allowed to do during the COVID protocols and the layoff. I'd imagine it's nothing unless you're doing stuff on your own.
He was hitting off a tee in his backyard.
There you go, right? And
nothing wrong with that.
I mean, that's good for your timing, I guess, but it's not in-game action, right? So it's going to take a while for him to catch up to speed. So if he's immediately back against the Rays, I almost look at him as a non-factor in that series. Maybe against Washington and then Atlanta, I think, is after that.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta's going to be rough. When it comes to Springer, knock on desk that we'll see him sooner rather than later. Excuse me. I don't think we're going to see him until May. I'm still sticking by that. I think they're going to handle him with kid gloves, and I still think they're going to wait until they go on that West Coast swing. But I've been wrong before many times. When it comes to Hatch, right? Not
Hatch is,
wait a minute, who's on the 60-day DL?
Hatch got on the 60.
Hatch. All right, so I'm predicting Tommy John for that. It's just, if you're telling me he's got a an elbow injury, he's going on a 60-day IL, he's getting Tommy John. So I'm not expecting him back at all. Merriweather, what is
he's
the, is that the hip?
He was an oblique injury, oblique. And they're expecting him oblique. To May 20th.
Yeah,
is that's what the projection is right now.
Ugh. Oblique with pitching, that's rough. But still, May 20th, that's pretty far out. And Romano's supposed to be back sooner rather than later, right?
Saturday.
Yes. And that's kind of why Saturday. I left him out of that conversation. He's back.
So, I mean, when you figure in all these people that are going to come back incrementally, I do think June is going to be that sweet spot for the Blue Jays, and maybe that's when we're going to see them sort of come to life if everything goes well. But in the meantime, I know we're going to talk about it soon, but don't hedge your bets in Tropicana. Just don't. I'm sorry.
This is a roll of the dice at best at Trop.
Yeah.
Chris or Brendan, you want to run with the injury thing or anything to add? Adam pretty much knocked that one out of the ballpark.
Chatwood's supposed to be back tomorrow, so that's okay. I think that gives a little bit more comfortability in the bullpen, which will be nice. Rather than seeing the same familiar faces being run out there and kind of hanging on the edge of your seat. I'm right with Adam on Hatch. As soon as he went down in spring training, I was like, that's bad. It was really bad. And they're doing the same thing that they did with Giles, where they kind of pussyfooted around the situation and waited. And now, like, Hatch is going to miss 2 years now because they didn't just get it over with in March.
Right.
And that really irks me, to be honest, because like if there was even a slight chance, go get him checked out, get it dealt with, miss a year, come back even halfway through next year, and you're at least an arm for the back end of the bullpen or something, or you're into throw a couple of starts together for us for a push, or who knows what's going to happen next year as well, to be honest. But judging by the way MLB and the Players Association work.
Well, it doesn't look good.
It's really not going to be a lot. You know, Springer's also, or Stripling's also day to day. Say what you want about him, but that's another arm that's, he can give us innings. They may not be fantastic, they may not be great, but they're better than Tanner Roark going out there. Are they better than Anthony Kay? I don't know if he's better than Anthony Kay, to be honest, but he's an established arm that's going to give you innings. Springer, I don't know. I think we'll see him before May, and it'll be really, really telling what happens this series. If the boys hit and say we go in and we sweep, like,
just finally get off the schneid and run with it.
It's okay. Then we don't need him back. I think, who do we play? Washington?
Yeah.
Then I think you leave him out of the Washington series as well, and then you bring him in for Atlanta. If the boys don't hit this weekend, Springer's playing.
Yeah.
Springer's coming back and he's playing.
The biggest catch on that whole thing with the Washington is that's actually a home in Dunedin too. So he's there right now. So that's a nice little perk.
It's not far for him to go from Dunedin to Tampa though as well, if you really need it.
True. But to play in the shithole.
Nobody wants to play in that shithole.
Just like apparently the Yankees don't want to play in Buffalo, but fuck them.
I might take Springer a step further and say if he reacts well to his intra-squad game tomorrow, he's back on Saturday. Because, look, I don't think they're going to hit Glasnow very well tomorrow. And I just think out of abundance of pressure to start getting going for a team that had high expectations and a fan base that's getting anxious and tweeting every single night, we need him back, we need him back. I have a feeling that he could be back on Saturday. But again, maybe if they win on Friday, maybe they're just like, you know what? Let's just wait until we're actually back in Dunedin and we'll activate him for Washington. I just want to be optimistic, man. I just want to see the guy play at some point. So I'm going to say Saturday for him. And you know what? The bullpen injuries, you know what? Take your time because the bullpen's been fine. That's been the strong suit of this team so far. Mm-hmm. I know that Chatwood coming back, who has started off really, really well. I don't know. I don't even remember him walking a guy. I'm sure he's walked one or two, but like his command's been really good. And Romano coming back is obviously huge. And then you could go back to five guys deep at the back end of your bullpen with Phelps, Dolis, and Barucki with Chatwood. and Romano. But again, Castro's been fine. Piamps has been fine. It's the rotation that I would like to see just one more arm back right now. They're very, very lucky that the schedule's gone out this way, this week and next week, where they can go down to four guys, have your three best arms going this weekend, and then figure it out on the fourth day, and then start the cycle over again and go back to Ryu, Ray, and Mats. And then that gives you the best shot to win some close games while the offense gets healthier. The only thing I'll add on Teoscar Hernandez is, yes, they also need him back really badly. If he can come back on Saturday, good, get him going, get him some at-bats. But are we all forgetting that he struck out in almost half of his at-bats before mm-hmm.
The timing was really off for him. Really off.
He was brutal before he got COVID. And we've seen it in sports this past year. If an athlete's got COVID, they never necessarily bounce back very well. I'm thinking Cam sure? Newton.
Freddie Freeman won an MVP award.
Cam Newton got COVID, and he came back, and the Patriots season was derailed. I don't know if you watch soccer, but Newcastle, their best player, Alan St. Maximin, got COVID, and he hasn't been the same player all year.
Miami went to the playoffs last year, and their whole team
That's
had.
True. They were the worst.
Juan Soto literally had a phantom COVID, and look what he did last year.
But still, I mean, there's cases. I mean, I just don't want to hedge my bets that Teoscar's going to come back and magically figure it out, because the combination of COVID and the fact that he looked dreadful and struck out in almost half of his at-bats, just like, man, maybe we got to lower expectations for how soon you could get back up to speed on that.
So, question for the gang then, based on your fun here. Is he at least better? Is having Teoscar Hernandez, even in like the state that you were alluding to with the COVID fun, right? And is he still better at bats than some of the other guys that we've been trucking through our DH spot?
Yes.
Yep.
So that's what I think it's going to end up.
You have a little fear factor with him.
Yeah.
He can go boom, boom.
Yeah, in the midst of that, so at least if you're putting him in the DH spot, and honestly, I think that's a nice way to ease him in, especially from some of the things I've heard about after the facts of COVID. One of the guys I worked with that had COVID, he had a cough for like 2 months afterwards, and they're like, oh, that's just called the COVID cough. You'll get over it eventually. It just magically vanishes one day. You know, it's just how it works, apparently. But if he has any of that kind of lingering nonsense going on, okay, it's a lot different to be DHing and running only the bases and then sitting than to run around the whole outfield and then worry about having to hit at the same time. It's a nice way to at least get his lumber into the bat. And with the, I would say, barely sub-Mendoza line that we're getting from our DH spot right now with nobody being able to hit, it's got to be worth it, right?
See, the issue with that is you're going to want to get Springer DH at-bats as well.
Yeah.
But those are the days, the random days. And I can see the wheels turning, Mr. Corsair. Just come on. I feel a rant coming.
No, it's not a rant. It's just I think I was going to bring up the DH point because I don't know how you're going to settle out this lineup, right? There's so much logjam, and it makes me wonder why nothing was done to sort of trim the fat earlier. Right, and I understand depth is a good thing. We're seeing it with the outfield. Like, say we've been ragging on Graychuk all offseason. He's been serviceable. He's been pretty good. I mean, if he wasn't on this team and we had, you know, Jonathan Davis full time, we probably wouldn't even have 8 wins at this point. Mm-hmm. So that being said, I just don't know how you're gonna sort this out, right? I don't know if you're gonna take, you know, arms out of the pen to make room for these guys on the roster. I don't see that happening, right? You can't take away guys like Thornton. You can't take away, at this point, with the lack of starting pitching, you can't take Kay away. You can't substitute from a bullpen that's working. Someone's going to get sent down.
Or even DFA'd.
Yeah, you have
Roark.
There's only so many Roarks.
But, like, with the contract, I just don't know that they're comfortable doing that. To me, the person right now that needs to go down, and I don't care what this does for his confidence, I do not care. Danny Jansen has to get sent down. He has to, right? When you think of – remember Teoscar. Teoscar, when he was on this when we traded for him, we sent him right to AAA, right? Didn't he go right to Buffalo after the trade from mm-hmm. Houston? Yep. And he's commented on that and saying that was a really humbling moment, and they sort of, you know, tweaked his approach and, you know, made him a better hitter. Something like that, a reality call to Danny Jansen, has to be done. And I know that means probably Reese is going to have to come up, or they're going to, you know, fiddle around with the catching situation. but Danny Jansen is a liability right now. I do not care about the defense. I'm sorry. Like, I know that might be, like, you know, hard to hear from people that are defensive truthers because he's been pretty good, but I need hits. You can't really win with defense. You need to produce. And if the remainder of the lineup isn't producing, then I'm sorry. Your process of elimination, you are statistically the worst hitter on this team. And he's got to go at this point. And I'm not saying trade him. I'm not saying get rid of him.
No, you got
to I think
a
trip to the minors. Yeah, you have to try to right the ship with him. You have to.
So on that note, do you throw, seeing where we're going next on this whole thing, is we're going to start talking position battles. So I guess segue points for you, Mr. Corsair. we'll talk catching first. And sure. We've already just officially put Danny Jansen on blast here for possibly losing his job. If he does get sent down, are you giving Alejandro Kirk the everyday job, or are you going to try finding something else? Our minor league system does not have a readily available catcher outside of Alejandro Kirk. And I just happened to pull up, per this conversation, the quote-unquote leftover free agent catchers. The only two that are really good are Tyler Flowers and Matt Wieters. And neither of those guys are really exciting me, when neither of them have ever worked with any of the pitchers on our current landscape at all. So
when was the last time Wieters actually caught?
Ooh, I don't know.
That's actually a really good question. He, quote-unquote, is a catcher.
19?
Probably 2019. Yeah. Even then, I'm pretty sure.
When he was with the Nats, right?
Yeah.
That's only. That's about what I remember. So,
yeah, when it comes to catching, you would have to by default give it to Kirk, because you can't, I think you just bring someone up from the system and just give them a go, because you can't expect, so unless you're signing some sort of veteran, right? Unless you're bringing in someone that can easily transition with the starting pitchers that we have, because, you know, outside of Ryu, and I know Ray really likes throwing to Kirk, the remainder of the roster, maybe Matt's, but the remainder of the pitching staff that you're putting in there probably have the voice to have a preference. You take what you can get. And I don't know that Ryu would necessarily have a problem throwing to Kirk anyway. So, at this point, you have to just do what it takes to you owe it to Jansen as someone that you brought up and groomed in this organization to give him another shot, right? But right now he's become a liability. That's just the bottom line. He's just not. I have my serious doubts that he's a legitimate bona fide starting catcher at all. He might just be a backup catcher for the rest of his career, which is fine. But he's not a starting catcher in this system or in the MLB today. He's just not.
Chris, I can see you seeing. Yeah, okay.
so Wieters did catch 18 games last year. And
so he has been catching. And in all reality, whatever happens, he would probably be in a 50-50 or a backup role to Kirk, would be the reality, being the guy that knows the staff.
I don't even think that. If you bring one of those guys up here, you're playing him as a regular backup catcher. Yep. And he's catching maybe once, twice a week, tops.
Yep.
Danny Jansen is a huge liability right now. Striking out a ton. He's making, when he does make contact, other than last night, he hit a couple of ropes last night, right at guys, unfortunately. But, like, his approach is so bad right now. He's turning in. Wes is going to love me for saying this. He's turning into JP.
Oh no!
Minus he can catch the ball.
I can hear Greg Zahn calling you out on that right now.
The only thing that Jansen has up on JP is he can catch the ball. I'm sorry,
he's not a QAnon. Yeah.
JP should have been a first baseman in his career.
It is. And for them to take that long to take Semien out of the leadoff spot, like, for the masterminds of never having the same lineup every single night,
right?
Why was Semien leading off that much? He was clearly struggling. And, like, granted, nobody else is hitting. And, like, who's your next viable option? Unless you like move Bo and Vlad up, which I don't want any part of. Your next viable option to lead off is, I don't know, Randall Grichuk. Probably not a great option either.
And in this landscape, you're not going to move Bo Bichette out of the second or third spot with what's going on. So, got to have some ducks on the pond.
This team collectively just they need something. Do they need George Springer to come back and light a little fire under them? Maybe that's it. And maybe it's having Hernandez back. Maybe it's having somebody to protect these guys in the lineup just a little bit more. Maybe you wedge Rowdy in between Vlad and Teoscar. So maybe they recognize that he's struggling, and maybe they give him a pitch to hit because they don't want to deal with Teoscar behind him, and then you roll out Semien behind him, and you got Thunder behind him. But as of right now, the bottom three or four guys in our lineup, there are all these outs for pitchers, so why not just go straight after an attack?
Yeah. So going to the catcher conversation, if we don't pick up anybody and we send Danny Jansen down, somebody's got to come up and be a backup catcher. I'm going to ask the question, fellas, is Riley Adams or a Gabriel Moreno really any worse than what we're dealing with right now with the catching position if we had to bring up another catcher?
They did the same thing with Kirk last year.
Riley Adams had a pretty sneaky spring. He didn't get into many games where he would have faced quote-unquote major league players, but he was definitely hitting bats against guys that are fringe or quadruple A batter or pitchers, so he's seeing some quality-ish pitching in the spring. And honestly, guys, I was always the one thing I always thought I liked about Riley Adams was the fact that he actually looks like a catcher, and I think he actually will carry that position. Yeah, exactly. There is that. So, but I thought he would be a salvageable person, and right now in this landscape of where what would be the worst thing for even his development to get a taste of this whole thing while you give Danny Jansen a chance to really take that step back and possibly retool. This is a guy that we saw bat 300 for two straight seasons in the minor leagues. All of a sudden, just can't even hit water if he fell out of a boat. And regardless of the couple ropes he's had and how many times I've heard Pat and Buck say, oh, maybe that's the start of it. That's been going on for over 70 games now. So it's getting a little rough. And as everybody knows to our fans of this show, the three of us, and I'm sure even Chris, we've been big supporters of Danny Jansen. If we're starting to get off of this ship, it's getting bad, and we want to win some ball games. And right now, he is the glaring issue. Anybody want to wrap anything on that before I move on to the next position?
One of the glaring issues.
No, I'll take that, because before I send him down, give Kirk everybody except for Ryu, because Ryu and Jansen work extremely well together, just like Ray and Kirk do. But let Alejandro Kirk catch the rest.
It's like flipping the script for right now.
Yeah, exactly. And let Jansen sit on the pine for a little while, come in, get his at-bats a couple times a week, and maybe he stings a few and gets a little bit of confidence back, and maybe that lights a fire under his butt. But I'm tired of saying that now for Danny Jansen, even being a huge supporter of him. It's beyond, like, the sample size is way too big now to the fact that he hasn't hit the big league level. I would do that before I send him down for sure, make him the actual backup catcher. And I don't know about you guys, but a few people tweeted about this on Tuesday. I understand that you don't want to lose a DH in case it comes back up, but the DH spot didn't come back up on Tuesday night when they decided to pinch hit Rowdy with Kirk and take Kirk out of the game. To me, that was a sign that I know Kirk was struggling. To me, it's like, do you not believe in Kirk's bat either right now? And like, come on. So I don't know what's going on there, but I would trot Kirk out as the everyday guy outside of Ryu starts at this point, just to switch it up. Kirk's at-bats have looked a lot better over the last week or so. That hit that he got last night looked really good. So get him in there as much as you can. See if he can light a spark offensively. The way things are going right now, I think it was Isaac on Twitter, IB_gaming or whatever his handle is, put a little graphic out there in terms of production from the catcher spot in all the major leagues, and the Blue Jays are in the bottom left-hand corner of this graph. And
probably reasonably far in that relevant
corner. Very far. And the best teams are on the top right side of that are going to probably make the playoffs. So you need a good catcher, and a catcher that can at least be competent with the bat. And the Blue Jays don't have that right now, but they might with Kirk. And they got to explore that at this point.
Yeah. Kirk is definitely obviously upsided on his bat side. And I think he is a – we've seen it throughout his minor league career. Defensively, he is good enough back there. It's not going to be a liability or cause issues. And honestly, everybody, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but everybody that does throw to him enjoys it. It's not like they're like, oh, he's like Gary Sanchez and doesn't know what the hell he's doing back there. And he's going like this with his glove. Yeah, it was a thick target. There's difference. Yes. All hail King Kirk. So let's move around the infield a little bit, guys, here. I unfortunately don't want to Adam Corsair's Man Crush Monday under the bus, but he kind of did that for me earlier in the show, so I'm kind of just going to move along with it. Do we really see Kevin Biggio as being a third baseman of this team going forward? And if you do that, who do you put at third to move this around? Or is this the conversation that we have to have collectively with Bo, Biggio, and Semien, and how that literally is going to be a hopodge, like crazy shuffling over the next, hopefully, few weeks here? Something's got to get in that equation.
What do you mean by the future? I mean for this season?
I'll say now. Okay. I shouldn't have said future.
No, that's fine.
Because future, we all have been talking many a times that is probably really rightfully Jordan Groshans' spot going forward.
Yes. Yeah, the future third baseman of this team is not on the current roster right now. I think Kevin is dealing with a hodgepodge of just shit, right? And this is a player that should be excelling and steadily increasing his production just based on talent alone. And I think the I know he's viewed as sort of a utility player, which is great. And that is his job, to play multiple positions. But I just think third base is just completely out of his realm right now. It's not in his wheelhouse. Problem is, you don't really have many good options unless you put Vlad there. If you want to go back to that and have Vlad play third and give Rowdy some time back at first base, that's fine. But then where are you putting Kevin? Because Semien's not going to play second, right? And Bo's not going to not play short, at least for this season. So Kevin's one of those odd men out. I feel uncomfortable with that because he's my boy and I don't want him really anywhere. But if he's going to play this utility role, maybe just having him kind of ride the bench will do him well. I don't see how that's going to do him any favors, because in order to get out of a rut, you have to play out of a rut. So right now, I just think the best bet is for him to continue to play third base and hopefully knock on desk. He figures it out. I just don't know that that's going to happen. And I feel for him because I love him. I think he's going to be an outstanding player, and I hope it's with the Blue Jays. But right now, I just think they're killing his value. And it's not because they're doing it on purpose, obviously. It's just, I just don't think they have any better options.
How much of this do you think is his offensive issues translating into his third base? Because there was a couple weeks ago, guys, that on this show, literally, we were talking about, wow, he actually doesn't look bad. And the arm is carrying over at third base. This has literally been a two-week flip. That, do you think it's bleeding into his defense?
I think it's the opposite.
Defense is bleeding into the offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense. Either way, fixing it for you is just keep playing through it.
You have to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't know how many other options you have other than the, like what we were talking about with Vlad being the obvious clear choice, I think, at third base, because the other options are putting like Joe Panik over there.
Right.
That doesn't help with anything.
No. Vlad going to third is not an option for this team.
There you go.
It's not an option for this team. You can't put him into a position where he's failed before and put that in the back of his mind. Chances are it's probably not going to be. He's finally hitting. The last thing you want to do is mess with anything in that guy's routine. You play first base and you're going to get your DH days, and you hit the ball. Hit the ball. You just worry about what you're doing. We're not going to mess with you, because it's. Can you imagine where we'd be if Vlad wasn't hitting?
Yeah. Oh my God. Do we even have a win without Vlad hitting like he's been hitting?
It might
be arguable.
Probably both against Nick, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, no, Vlad moving to third isn't an option. You have to leave Kevin there, and unfortunately you have to live with the struggles. And he'll right the ship. He's a good enough player and has a good enough head on his shoulder. He'll right the ship. You got to be patient. Maybe you get somebody other than Louis Rivera to come in and work a little on third base with him. Maybe he needs a different voice in his ear to kind of settle that down and get him in a better spot. He hasn't been attacking the ball in the field, and the one time that he did yesterday, and I don't really fault because he just didn't the one error where he grounded it, he kind of just bobbled the ball a little bit, didn't have a good on it.
It almost looked like he tried to throw an Andy Pettit like palm ball to first base. It got way down in here in his hand. Yeah. It's kind of hard to throw a baseball when it's like this.
I don't really fault him for that too much because I liked what I saw out of that. He was attacking the ball, going to get it, trying to cut that throw shorter. We all know the arm strength struggles that he's been having. So to cut that ball off and try to make that throw shorter, I think that's what you want to see out of him. I don't necessarily know if I want to see him doing the too low approach and throwing on the run so much.
Yes, yes.
That's what Bo's doing right now.
And yep. Bo's been doing as well. They need to stay back and they need to trust their arm. And they need to get a good footing and unload the ball.
Yeah. So do I want to give Brendan segue points now? Because he just alluded to the next position we're going to chit-chat about.
Hold on, Brendan. Did you want to say anything about Kevin, Brendan?
No. I mean, the only thing I was going to say is I think that them not making a defensive sub for Panic last night was a sign that they're willing to ride it out with Biggio.
Yeah. It's a very valid point. So anyway, Mr. Panikar, I'll let you pick off the fact that we're going to talk Bo Bichette. Has the foundation of him being the shortstop of the Toronto Blue Jays, period, been shaken for you in the last few weeks? Or is this just a blip on the radar of some of the defensive issues that we've been seeing kind of, it seems like a little regularly-ish over the last week and a half? What say ye?
It's in question, for sure, whether shortstop's his position moving forward or not. I mean, we saw this last year. We saw this in one of the playoff games against the Rays last year. Just boneheaded plays where he's just either not attacking the ball, just not getting in his glove properly, whatever it is. So it's definitely in question whether he's a shortstop long term or not. Where he plays, I mean, maybe second. I've seen people suggest that. And look, clearly, if the organization went to him and said, what are your thoughts on Francisco Lindor a couple off seasons ago, then they're maybe thinking the same kind of thing where they're like, yeah, I think you might be better suited for second base. There are shortstops in the system. I know Warmoth had himself a good spring. Kevin Smith is still down there. There's nobody as of right now that would make me be like, yeah, you got to move him off. Correct me if Austin Martin primarily played third base, right? Or did he play a lot of shortstop,
played
too?
Played a lot of short, too.
Yes.
He played both. So maybe it's Austin Martin that they're like, okay, you go play short, and Bo, you go play second, and Jordan Groshans, you play third, and then you got the makings of a nice-looking infield, hopefully. Bo's got to get going. He's frustrating me defensively, but offensively, he's also been very much a savior. I mean, Vlad, those have been the two most consistent guys probably since the Yankees series. A lot of Grichuk's start was from the Yankees and a little bit of the Rangers series too. But ever since that first week, it's been pretty much primarily Bo and Vlad that's been leading the offense. So I won't take that away from Bo. But yeah, his defense is driving me insane.
Adam, you want to run with it?
Yeah, I just don't know that he's a shortstop, period. And that says nothing about his ability to as a major league baseball player. I think he belongs on this team. He's clearly hitting like he belongs on this team. I just don't know that that's his position. And I know he's battling for it. It reminds me a little bit of when R.A. Dickey came, he's like, all right, I'm going to catch for him. And he just couldn't. He was just so adamant about catching for R.A. Dickey, and he just couldn't do it.
I think R.A. Dickey threw a Dodge Neon at JP.
Yeah,
wouldn't have still been able to get
caught. Yeah, he's like, I'm totally gonna work in this offseason with him. Whatever. I admire the fact that right now he's the best option. Maybe if Simeon, I don't know. Like Simeon didn't he have a pretty good year with Oakland at short? I mean,
he looked like a defensive first short or a defensive shortstop, period. And yeah, very salvageable.
What's the harm of switching him? What is the harm?
Right now, I'd only be worried about breaking the offense if I switched him.
With Bo?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Semien right now, I honestly think that would help him. Because that's right now, it's the flip-flop of him being on the wrong side of the infield. He's looked great defensively, but how much is that seeping into the fact that he's working more on his defense to maybe reason we only see in the power, really, from his bat?
Right, right. Yeah, I just don't know the answer.
Yeah. If Semien was here for 3 or 4 years, then I would say yes. The fact that he's here for 1 year, I don't really care what he thinks.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It seems like him playing second was a bit of a condition to signing here too.
Yes.
Yeah. In my opinion, I think as much as I'm completely like I said, I would say my best way of saying it is that my confidence in his defensive prowess at shortstop has been shaken over the last few weeks, and obviously the other points that Brendan pointed out of last year in the playoffs and was not. But that being said, I think right now this season the Blue Jays have to do or die with Bo Bichette at shortstop. Just because of the if you are messing with it, and God knows what else goes wrong in the midst of that. Right now, he can be a really good shortstop, I think, but it will be an off-season question, I think, to know about what his future is really going to be. Per what you said, Adam, with the fact that there is some good guys in the cupboards to be able to pop in and play shortstop.
How much did we pay Semien? 18.
18, yep.
Oof, that would look really good behind the plate right now.
Should I even look up how good or bad JT Realmuto's doing? I don't have him on my fantasy team this year, so I have no idea.
No, I'm just stupid.
I have learned over the years in fantasy baseball, you don't spend good picks on catchers.
Yeah. Hey, I saw this tweet last night. I wonder if you guys agree with it. This team right now, when you look back to 2015, because I think expectations are as high as they were there, maybe even to start 2016. Does this team, especially defensively right now, kind of feel like the 2015 Blue Jays before the Tulo trade, with Jose Reyes constantly bobbling balls and the circus that was Chris Colabello and Danny Valencia playing in left field? It was just terrible. And I don't know who it's going to be. If this team wants to make the playoffs, they're going to have to add somebody to come and shore up the defense. I don't know if that's Chris Bryant. I don't know who it is at this point, but maybe that's what it'll take.
It very well could be exactly that. It really wouldn't shock me. And that might have been the reason, to your point, Adam, earlier, on why they keep the cupboard stocked with the guys that they have.
Go get Trevor Story.
That'd be nice.
That would be nice. I think you would be able to actually turn around and actually flip him to keep him, too.
Yep, go get him.
That'd be really nice.
He's looking for a place to win. That's all it is. Period. And if the Blue Jays are actually, that's the reason George Springer's here and he's on that ridiculous contract. So
would you, here's a question for you guys, just to interject for a second. Sure, would you rather them spend the money for Trevor Story? I don't know what it's going to take, probably north of $250 million
especially
to keep
now,
him here.
Post Lindor.
Yeah, exactly. And who else is out there? Corey Seager's out there. There's somebody else out
there.
There's
one more.
There's one more. Or is it?
If it came down to just those two, I'm throwing a brick of money at Corey Seager if I can get him away from the freaking Dodgers. But that's maybe.
Well, here's the thing, though. You have all of these guys coming. Do you spend the money on Trevor Story or Corey Seager, or do you go out and get pitching? Because I feel better with what we have on the infield right now and what's coming. Rather than dumping that money there, I would much rather go and get some front of the line pitching. Hmm. Whether you're never going to get Kershaw away, but like that's a pipe dream. But could you go throw a truckload of money there? Verlander's coming up. You don't know what he's going to look like, but for a 1 or 2 year deal, do you go throw the dump truck of money at him or Scherzer?
Yeah. Especially with Scherzer still getting paid by the Nationals.
They're getting into old man winner. They're getting into old man winner territory, but like those are some big time arms that you could probably throw a boatload of money at and get them to come up here for 1 or 2 years and really make a difference and push this team that much further ahead.
Carlos Correa, I think you guys were thinking of.
That's it.
Correa.
Let's go around. I like that question. Go around the table, Adam. Kick it off.
So we're talking about a top end shortstop, like in that tier. Close to elite tier, right, that would be available. We're thinking like a Trevor Story or maybe even a Correa or starting here. Like the a legitimate bona fide ace, you're saying?
Yeah, I'm talking Kershaw, Verlander, Scherzer. There's one or two others that are in that area as well for next year.
Elite ace.
So it's like a David Price thing all over again. You go for the pitching. Of course you go for the pitching. It's what wins games.
Yeah. Brendan?
Yeah, I'm with that too. I'm with the pitching side of things as well. Ask me in a few years once Manoa and SWR and others are here, and I'll probably say the opposite, depending on what's going on with Bo. But as of right now, this current day, I'll take the starter, because imagine pairing that with Ryu. And Adam, you said bona fide ace. reuse the bonafide ace. We have
one. Oh, I know. Yeah. So you had two. Like, this is...
That's Halliday Burnett level if you get something else on that.
Where I was getting with that is you're not losing as much having Bo playing shortstop and having Trevor Story there instead, or having Tommy Malone make start for you and you have Max Scherzer make start for you. Yeah, that's where I'm going with that.
Yes. Yeah. Bo isn't. It's not parallel to how Reyes was playing for the Jays, right? He's playing
Reyes
better than that.
Reyes
is really a war. Yes. I guess I would be attracted to Story at this point because we also need the offense, right? So it's not just the defense with the shortstop position. It's the offensive production that would come out of that. But going into the playoffs, you obviously want to ride the pitching. Correct. So long term, looking at the long game, I want the pitching.
Yeah. Mm. Right now, I would be doing what you guys were saying, the starting pitching thing. Right now, that's where I would throw my money.
Yeah.
Right now, if it was an off-season move where I'm acquiring that talent, I would actually go the other direction. And that's because I have a lot of confidence in the Blue Jays minor league arms that are coming up. We haven't gotten a real chance to see what Nate Pearson has got, but if, you know, whatever hell happens this year, he'll come back hopefully healthy next season. Yeah, we were just talking a few minutes ago that Thomas Hatch might be off the table, but we also have guys that people have forgotten about. Eric Pardino, in the midst of the conversation of adding SWR and Alek Manoah. I feel like they have five or six guys that could be ready to go in our starting rotation as early as next year. And what better way to completely bolster a young pitcher's confidence than giving him a fuck ton of runs? So if I was able to go out and grab a Corey Seager or a Correa or whoever it might be, or whoever that top end, you know, offensive talent might be able to toss into what we know is only going to eventually become a ridiculous offense, I would lean in the direction that our pitching is in the more major league ready come next season than hoping that Jordan Groshans is going to come all of a sudden and be, you know, the Ed Sprague that we had in 1994, 1995, or adding, you know, it could end up being a Russ Adams situation. I'd be that guy that jinxes it, but we have had so much more shit luck developing talented infielders in this organization than we have had in pitchers. I would lean in the direction of that we will hit on probably two or three of those pitchers out of those guys I was just alluding to quite easier than we would hit on the fact of trying to find some lumber. Don't forget, we thought we had the best third baseman in baseball in 2003 in Eric Hinsky. Just saying. And then he fell off a cliff. We never saw him again. Except he got to go see the postseason six times.
Yeah, he almost won a World Series with the Rays.
So, like I said, that to me, that's two different moves, right? One in season right now, if you could get a pitcher, yes, do it. Game on. But if you're talking long game, I think that's where the Blue Jays' future strengths are. So, anybody want to argue with me?
No.
I would still almost say that to bridge the gap, because you're probably only going to get Verlander or Scherzer on a 1 or 2 year deal. I would say having them to bridge that gap and lead those guys is also valuable.
Yes.
And very much so, sir.
Yeah.
Points.
Fuck it. Get both.
Game on. Brick.
$40 million each to come up here for a year. Are they going to say no?
Yeah, let's do it.
Game on. So,
like, what kind of salary do we have for next year? Like, Ryu and Springer.
That's
official.
Right. So we could add those guys and still be at what, $135 million probably for next year.
Yeah, definitely.
There you go. Boom. Drop the dynamite, right? So I want to go around the table really quick because we're going to start running long here a bit. Right now, current Blue Jays landscape. I want each of you to pick one thing that you would think would help right the ship right now, whether it's a tweak, a move, a hurry up and call out somebody on their offense or pitching, whatever it might be. I'm going to let Chris, you're going to go first, and I'm going to put you on the hot seat here. What could the Blue Jays do over the next week for the quickest change and hopefully some fortunes?
I just told you Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander.
There it is.
For me... Kevin Biggio, going back to Kevin Biggio.
So is that putting him in the leadoff spot, like you were talking about earlier?
I don't mind him in the leadoff spot, especially if Springer's not going to be there this weekend. I don't mind that even a little bit. Let him take pitches. Let him be himself. Tell him not to make the fancy play on the infield. Go back to fundamentals. Keep it simple, stupid.
That's engineering principle number one, but it always gets forgotten.
Yeah, like, and I think that's what it comes down to. Like everything is in his head right now, and he really just needs to go back to being what made Kevin Biggio good, and that was playing good fundamental baseball and being smart on the field and being patient at the plate. Get rid of the swing at the first pitch garbage. He's going to struggle against Glasnow. Yeah. Like he's really going to struggle against Glasnow.
In that defense, yeah. Everybody's going to probably struggle against Glasnow. He's been looking pretty damn good so far this year.
No, we're going to beat him up. Oh. We're going to beat him up.
Okay, there you go.
It'll be fine.
I love it.
Game on. Yeah,
we're going to beat him up.
There's your bold
Kevin's
prediction
gonna
for the week.
Kevin's probably going to struggle.
But we're going to beat him up.
But the rest of the team's going to be okay. No, if Biggio just goes back to being himself and not swinging and flailing at everything, I think that's a start to a catalyst for this offense, because I think the rest of the boys really lean on him.
Yeah. He's a little bit of a slight, like a quiet igniter, right?
Yep.
All right. Brent, what do you think? Best fix for the Blue Jays in the next week?
I need Lourdes to start hitting, man. Like, I mean, right now your top four, let's just use last night's lineup as an example. I know they had Cavan leading off.
Was he in the eighth spot?
Yeah, Lourdes in the eighth spot. But like, not where you have him in the lineup with all these people out. That's a bat that you got to count on. And we thought this outfield was going to be really damn good. And two of them haven't hit, and one of them hasn't even played yet. It's been not the outfield we expected to count on, not the outfield we expected to be one of the better ones in baseball. And Lourdes is supposed to be that other cornerstone of this team. When we talk about the three guys, which is Cavan, Bo, and Vlad, a lot of people are very quick to mention Lourdes' name as the fourth guy.
Yeah, like, don't forget about me over here. Like,
exactly. Don't forget about me. So Lourdes needs to get going. He hasn't hit a homer yet. He hasn't made I don't even remember him making too much hard contact. I'm pretty sure Bucks had last night. I don't even think he has an extra base hit yet.
He doesn't.
Lourdes Gurriel. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's inexcusable. He's supposed to be a cornerstone of this team, and he's under contract for, the next 4 or 5 years? I want him to be here. He's a good player. He's shown it. He showed it last year. He showed it in 2019 after he came back up. So he is going to be key. He reminds me so much of his brother, to be honest, in the Houston lineup. When Yuli Gurriel's going well, that Astros lineup just got ridiculously deep. And Lourdes could do the exact same thing in this lineup when everybody's healthy. So let's go.
He's got to catch the ball, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam, what say you?
Hit fastballs. And I'm saying this half kidding. Dante. Just bring up Dante. Bring Dante back. Let him be in the clubhouse. Let him tell these children how to play. And just his mere presence, and he just looks at Charlie Montoya, and he, you know, does the captain whatever. I'm the captain now kind of thing. Yeah.
There's a presence in that dugout when I honestly think you're onto something there, man.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different feeling in that dugout when Dante's in that dugout.
He was hitting ground balls to them. Like, it was like a little league coach hitting ground balls to the kids last year. He was look, I'm not saying that in and of itself is going to solve anything. I'm saying this half in jest, but I do think that sort of knowledge is valuable. That sort of hands-on knowledge is valuable, and I know that there's a fine line to be like, I don't want to interfere with my son's, you know, career too much. But at the same time, this is a veteran player, right? This is someone that can, I don't know, he's got a presence to him, and I do think that sort of, he's able to pinpoint errors and mishaps in players' games, and I do think he has the ability to sort of help course correct things. So I know his title in the Blue Jays organization is sort of unofficial. I just think he's consultant or something. Get him up here and, you know, be the de facto manager, because it's going to happen. We all know it's going to happen someday.
He doesn't have the best title in baseball like John Schneider. Just saying. Major league coach.
Major league coach.
That's all it is. What's your title? Oh, I'm just major league coach. Don't worry about it.
Oh, best title I've ever seen for any coach. And this is in baseball. Brad Childress, when he went from the Vikings to the Kansas City Chiefs, had the title of Special Projects Coordinator. What the fuck is a special project in football, man?
he's a coordinator.
So that means he's like special teams.
But no, in all seriousness, like, I know we like to rag on Montoyo, but for me, it's clear that it's either going to be Dante being the next manager, or it's going to be Russell Martin, because he pretty much auditioned his last game with the Blue Jays as a de facto manager player.
I'm a John Schneider fan.
That's really John Schneider through and through, and it'll be sooner, and it'll be sooner than later.
Especially if this team doesn't get off the fucking bench.
It'll be sooner than later. Yeah. It'll be sooner than later. And I think this team is going to kick themselves for giving Montoyo an extra year already.
There's that.
Yeah.
So. As a side note to your Dante Bichette stuff, if you guys haven't listened to the Swingin' a Bell podcast, to bring a third podcast into this, there was an episode that Dan Shulman did last year with Dante Bichette. Go listen to it.
It's that good.
Hitting church.
It's
so good.
And that's why honestly, I keep wondering why as much as Guillermo Martinez has helped some of the guys hit and did a good job for a young hitting instructor, right? It just seems no contest to me. I almost don't care. It's like, you know, Dante Bichette strikes me as more of a Paul Molitor in that dugout versus somebody that's, okay, he was good at hitting, right? Right. So
I think it has more to do with Bo. I'm being serious.
It probably does. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, I'll put my two cents into this conversation, and I can't say anything is a fix, but it needs to keep fucking happening. Steven Matz needs to keep acting like a goddamn ace, and this bullpen needs to continue to eat the fuck out of innings, because we actually had a chance to win that game with Ryu pitching the other night, and he was clearly off of his game, and that was thanks to the ensemble that came in out of the bullpen and was able to put it all together. And honestly, the next guy I'm going to call out, I want Trent Thornton to continue to step up. He has been looking really good over the last week, and I think he could earn that job back in this rotation if these injuries continue, and he could be the guy that steps up and takes a good spot in that, because he has been looking really good. He got off to a pretty good start yesterday, and honestly, I was pretty pissed they took him out after two innings. Why the hell?
I thought he was going to get a third.
I really thought it was. It had to probably been something in that bullshit of he's on an innings limit right now because he's working out of the bullpen. He's still building his arm. I don't give a crap. It's the same thing as Matt Shoemaker in the playoffs last year. Let the thing fucking ride. You know? So, but anyway, boys, it's that fun, wonderful time that we close out the show with picks to click. So, last week, we had in the guest spot, Steven Matz was picked by the fans. And
it's going to be tough to beat.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that was a little rough. And then Brendan Panikkar picked up Mr. Robbie Ray, who looked pretty damn good. So I'll give you an argument in there. We'll figure it out here like we usually do with our democratic process here on the show. Mr. Corsair, I'm sorry to say, I don't think Rowdy Tellez quite came through for you.
No.
And then because I was riding the first win I've literally gotten in a hole, like, since 2019, that I picked Vlad Jr. last week. So let's just bring it up here, and maybe we'll use our friend Chris K here before he makes his pick for our guest spot this week. That out of those three gentlemen, Robbie Ray, Vladdy, or Steven Matz, who will we give into the trophy to this week as far as the quote-unquote performer out of those clicks?
As much as I want to give it to the 2021 Cy Young winner, Robbie Ray, with Steven Matz in a close second, you can't not give it to Guerrero. Yeah. You can't. The offense is struggling so hard right now. Without him, I don't know where we would be.
Yeah. There you go. So, boys, just to put it in that perspective, if he's giving me, and you all agree with this, that I actually just got my second point in a row on this whole thing, not only is that the first two streak I've ever had, that is also the more wins than I had in the last, year.
There you go.
Yeah.
Quick turnaround.
In that case, I'll change it.
What? Oh, no. I was about to just, pick the mic up and, drop it.
That being said, Rowdy Tellez has been looking fantastic lately.
If we were hanging out the GOAT of the week, meaning the actual GOAT, not the greatest of all time. So anyway, on that, Brendan also picked a 4-2 record. I had a 3-3 record. And I actually, Mr. Corsair, I didn't have a record for you last week. So I don't know if you recall what you were thinking or if we just didn't literally talk about it.
I think I said 2-4 with Kansas City. I think split with the Red Sox. So I think I said three.
So you were on point on that. So good job. So anyway, Chris, if you are not familiar with the game, we kind of go old school White Sox and Hawk Harrelson on this, and we just pick who's going to perform in Blue Jay baseball the best over the next week. You are our guest this week, so you get to pick, have the luxury of hopefully getting the guest spot into the win column for the first time this year.
And pick the record that they'll go over the next five games.
That's the tiebreaker.
And the record? Oh, yep. Okay. Hang on. Well, how many games are we playing next week?
We got three, one, two, three, four, five.
But yeah.
So five games. Okay, so we're going 4-1.
There it is. That's a quick turnaround from bullshit.
we're going 4-1, and I'm sticking to my boy, the 2021 Cy Young winner, Robbie Ray.
Nice. There it is.
Mr. Tight Pants himself.
Yeah, they're slightly like Tommy, like so.
And he's going full on stupid this week too. Just throwing it out there, he's going full on stupid.
Like he's gonna do a Brandon Morrow like 19 K game or.
I don't know about 19, but he'll get at least what one start in this next week, maybe two. No, probably just one, maybe two. He'll have in those if he gets two starts, he'll have over 20 strikeouts.
Ooh,
I love
there
it.
There it is. Brendan, you want to go next?
Sure. I wish I was as optimistic as you, Chris. I am not. Being that we're at the trap and facing Glasnow tomorrow, I know math is going, but
do it.
I can't pick them to win tomorrow against Glasnow. Can't do that. I believe I had it up. The Rays rotation order. No, I've exited out of it. I think I saw Josh Fleming and Andrew Kittredge are the other two starters this series. But regardless, just win one. I mean, that's all you ever hope for when they go to the Trop. So give me one game there. And honestly, give me one against Washington, too. 2-3 for me is the record. And my pick to click, I'm going to go back offensively because my strategy of going starting pitching, I wouldn't say it backfired, but it also didn't get me a point. I pick him the first week and I want it. And I'm hoping that last night was the start of him doing something. I'm going back to Marcus Semien. I really think that maybe dropping him out of the leadoff spot could do some wonders. And if Springer comes back, if Tioscar comes back, then there's way less of a focus in the lineup on Semien. So I wouldn't be – following in Chris's prediction, if there's two starts of Robbie Ray of 20Ks, I think Semien might hit three home runs over the course of the next five games. I think he might get
those ballparks, he has a chance.
Yeah. Any doubles or triples, though?
I'll give
cycle.
Him.
Cycle.
You know what? Let's go with six extra base hits.
There it is. Bold.
And they're only going to win two games.
Yeah.
Like in my four wins already.
He's the only one hitting. Just
those will be the games they win.
Okay. Mr. Corsair, what do you think?
You guys are really optimistic about the Rays, man. I'm saying 1-4. Sorry. I do not fuck with the Rays. It is not a fuck around and find out situation. I'm not doing that. I think they're going to get swept by the Rays, unfortunately, and they'll take one against Washington.
There you go.
1-4.
They always find a way to take one at the Trop. The series. Always find a way to take one.
In the playoffs.
Yeah. But that was only two.
Game three was ours.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah.
True.
And it's because it was Taiwan Walker's fucking game. Yeah. Corsair, who's your pick?
I was thinking about this. All right. So, I mean, I haven't won anything yet when it comes to this, so I gotta pick a gimme.
Shut up.
I'll go Bo.
You're going to go Bo?
Yeah.
All right. And because I'm going to try keeping it as good natured as I've been trying not to pick the same guy 2 weeks in a row, I'm not going to pick Vladdy again. I'm actually going to call out Lourdes. I think as much loss as he is, I think the day off might do him some splendid wonderfulness, and they're going to actually have another day off this week. So that extended rest, you know, gives him some extra BP time or whatever it might be to finally shake it out. I'm hoping that he finally figures something out and actually shows up for the first time this season in the batter's box. And
nice.
Worst case scenario, I honestly, just to be a dick, I almost just picked Kirk. Just because I think he might start some more this week. I don't know why.
Oh, man.
But maybe that's a week too premature at this point. So we'll see. But anyway, fellas, is there anything you guys would like to add to the conversation, bring up last minute here before we sign off and do our two claps and a Ric Flair?
Yeah, what's your record?
Oh, my record? I forgot. I wrote down 3-2s. I think we're going to win one against the Rays, and then we're going to actually take both against the Nats.
Ooh, okay.
Nice. Right. Okay.
So something about being home finally is speaking well to me. Or maybe it's just because I'm a party on.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But anyway, anything else?
Nah.
Done this week. All right.
I'm good.
Thanks, Blue Jays fans, for listening in and feedback tonight. But we also had plenty of people listening, so we're very, very happy to have you all here. And in all reality, make sure you keep hitting us up for those live shows. This was an off week where we're going to be Thursday. Correct me, gentlemen, if I'm wrong. Was next week a Thursday also?
Yeah, next three.
The next three Thursdays in a row. As we bleed into May, we're going to be here Thursday evenings rather than our traditional Wednesday, because that's going to be the off day in between, you know, travel day and whatnot. So as we go from there, we're going to continue to have live shows for you here. Make sure you join the conversation. Hit us up on our Patreon accounts. Out to our friends over at Stadium Scene for helping us with this fun, wonderful time here. And, you know, also, wherever you get your podcasting pleasures from, I guarantee you we'll be there on Google Podcasts, Apple Play, whatever, whatever. So other than that, fellas, you ready for the two claps and Ric Flair?
Let's do it.
Game on. Woo-hoo! Let's go, Blue Jays.
Smoke stinks.